True Crime Society podcast contains adult themes and violence and is not intended for all audiences. Listener discretion is advised. And if you'd like to skip the intro or move to any specific part of the podcast, please refer to the timestamps listed in the episode description. Thank you. What's up, guys? Welcome back to another episode of the True Crime Society podcast with Stephanie and Olivia. It is July 20th. I literally am looking at the date. I don't know why my brain was just like, what month is number seven? It's the end of the day here. It's like 8 p.m. I'm 35 weeks pregnant right now, and pregnancy brain is like pretty serious. I've never felt so dumb in my life, honestly. So I'm sorry if anyone on the podcast has noticed, because sometimes I like even can't think of words.
I feel like it doesn't get any better too for a while after you have the baby. I remember once
I've heard people say that.
I can't even remember which baby it was, but we went to like the mall. When I got back to the car, I'm like, where are the car keys? And I'd left them on top of the car, they were still there. Thank God for that. But yeah.
The amount of times I have to use my watch to find my cell phone in a day is like ridiculous, because I just can't remember where I put it down. Whereas normally I'm not like that at all. I could find it fairly quickly. But now I'm like four times a day I got to be like, ring phone. I have no idea where it is, and I literally just had it. It's pretty much always like right next to me somewhere. I just can't find it. Same with like going to like Google something, or like you open your phone for some reason to like look something up, or be like, oh, I have to order this, I have to do this. And like as soon as I unlock my phone, I'm like, wait, what am I doing? And it's gone.
I feel like sometimes it doesn't get much better. I don't know if it's the hormones or what, but it plays havoc with your brain.
Well, as long as everyone remembers, I used to be smart. I used to be quick. Those days are maybe over. But yeah, so currently 35 weeks pregnant. When this comes out, it'll probably be 37, which is kind of scary. Mm. We've been trying to work on the nursery. I've been trying to get so much done, but it's hard because I've gotten to the point where I've said this for months where I'm like uncomfortable, but it just keeps getting like worse and worse and more uncomfortable and more uncomfortable. But we tried putting a new light in the nursery this weekend, and it was just like a big to-do for some reason, because I live in an older house, so nothing is ever just cut and dry. Nothing ever lines up straight. It's just always a fiasco to begin with. And then it's a light basically where you drill part into the ceiling, and then there's like two screws that come down that then go into the base of the fixture. But of course, we're trying to do that after like an hour, and we have to turn the power off to do it because we couldn't figure out which like little fuse went to just that room. So we're like, let's just shut everything off. It won't take that long. Like an hour later, we're both sweating because it's so hot here. It's getting dark out, of course. And the two screws that come down from the ceiling piece, just because of our ceiling being kind of weird, they're too short. So now I just have this light dangling until I can go buy longer screws for it. And it's like 99% done. And I'm just like so annoyed about it. But I feel like that's how everything in this journey has been, of being like, okay, we suffer, get 99% done, and then it's like, we need another part, we need another piece, or we need someone else to come do it.
Never ending.
It's like the saga of, yes, I'm grateful to own a house, but I also hate owning a house.
Yeah, I know, definitely trade-offs. I guess you get it back in the end when you eventually need to sell it, but just the maintenance and all that is a nightmare.
That's what I'm telling myself, like, just the painting and everything that we've had to do, which painting isn't even hard, but being pregnant makes it 100 times harder, and just having the patience to do all these things.
Painting is one of the absolute worst jobs. We painted our first house and I said never again. This time when we moved here,
that's how I am now.
Yeah.
Yeah. I used to like not mind it and kind of think it was fun. After painting this house, never again. And then also just like a totally separate thing, not to go on and on about house stuff, there is like, we have this hallway. I talked about it a while ago because remember I said we painted the hallway because we thought like nicotine was like leaching through the walls, and we painted it with this like crazy primer, and then Peep ran through and got the primer on her foot and then was running and got all over the place. Do you remember that?
Yes, yes, yes.
And I was crying because Peep was getting paint everywhere. So we're like, okay, problem solved. So we thought, of course, it's been so humid and hot here. The walls started kind of like doing that again and like leaching. And literally the one wall, it was like dark purple, like these drips. And it's really just like water. So I don't know why from this one wall, it's coming out like dark purple, because the other walls were just kind of wet. And it's almost like you have a cold soda can and you leave it out on a hot day and start sweating.
Gets condensation.
But literally, yeah, literally the walls looked like they were dripping blood. And I was like, great, now we need to get an exorcism. But we've been investigating, and we think it's because right where our attic is, so like the hot air and then like the cold air mixes from our air conditioners. Yeah, so we have a fan out there now. We're getting a dehumidifier, but basically it's just like the air's getting trapped in there, and we got this thing to like cover the attic door to try to help with it. So if anyone else has had that problem, let me know, because yeah, that's just a whole nother thing. It's always something.
Do you have a dehumidifier that you can put on, like a...
We have one under the house, and then I just ordered like a small one to put in the middle of the house in the hallway.
Because ever since like we had all that rain years ago and stuff started going moldy, we've had a dehumidifier, and now I just leave it out, and every like few days I'll put it on just to hopefully suck out some of the moisture.
Yeah, so hopefully that'll help once it comes. It's coming on tomorrow, I think. So we'll see.
Yeah.
But yeah, just, you know, it's always something going on. What about you? Any adventures?
No, drama, I guess it's been all
fiascos.
Just the same old Facebook meta bullshit, but no, nothing really. I feel like it's been a while since I've spoken about a book that I've read, so maybe I'll do that quickly because that is always relevant no matter when these episodes
People
come
are
out.
Asking in the Patreon chat today.
So I have book club this coming weekend. I've been struggling with the book. I'm just finding what it's called so I get it right. It's called He Would Never by Holly Wainwright. It's set in Australia. It's about these groups who kind of like these groups of families who meet at mother's group when their kids are babies and now the kids are teenagers. And I haven't finished yet. I have been struggling. It's been slow. It's been a bit boring. Like one of the guys is super creepy. I'm just like I probably would stop reading it if it wasn't for book club. So I'll keep you posted if it gets any better, because I am going to try and finish it before the weekend. But my sister-in-law reads a lot. So every time I see her, she gives me tons and tons of books. So the other day I thought, I'm just going to pick up a book and start like an escapist book, just to, you know, take my mind off stuff. So it was called Cuckoo by Callie Kazumi. And oh my God, I haven't finished it yet either, but it is insane. It's about this girl, and she finds out all of a sudden that her fiance has been living this double life. And like, it's absolutely the most unrealistic book ever, but so entertaining, so quick as well. Like, I hate books where you've got to take, you know, 10 chapters for anything to happen. It's super quick.
Yeah.
It's absolutely not a literary masterpiece, but if you are into crime, it's a very, very, very good holiday beach read if you're looking for one. Cuckoo by Callie Kazumi. The like tag is, she had everything until he took it away. So yeah, that's been a good one. I would for just entertainment purposes, a solid 8 for that one.
Have you read, I always see people talking about it and I always mean to read it, the book by Jeanette McCurdy, that I'm happy my mom's dead?
No, my mom died or whatever. And I saw them making that into a Netflix show or something. No, I haven't. I know the one you're exactly talking about, but no, I haven't read that one.
Yeah. My sister, we actually met her a long, long time ago, because my sister's soccer team was used as extras in the background of Law & Order SVU, and it was an episode that Jeanette McCurdy was like the victim on, so we got to watch them film it, and she was on it and stuff. But apparently it's just like a really crazy story about like what her mom put her through to be a child star.
Yeah, it would be an interesting read. Maybe I'll think about that one next. I think
I would have thought for sure that you guys would have read it by now.
No, I don't know why. The August book that they've picked, which I'm just looking up now because I haven't heard about it, it's called The Extraordinary Life of Sam Hell, a novel. It says, Sam Hell always saw the world through different eyes. Born with red pupils, he was called Devil Boy or Sam Hell by his classmates. That sounds interesting. Gets 4.5 on Goodreads. That's a pretty solid ratings. Yeah.
All right, so let's get into what we're talking about today. We're talking about an older case, the disappearance of a 7-month-old named Christopher Enoch Abeita. He went missing from his crib in Colorado Springs, Colorado, on July 15th, 1986. So again, I say again because we just recorded another one where the anniversary was coming up. But this anniversary is coming up also. No, it just passed, actually.
Just passed. Because
today is the 20th. This was July 15th, 1986. So we just passed the 39th anniversary of his disappearance, which is kind of crazy. That's a very long time.
I feel like this is a case, too, that probably wouldn't happen so much today, especially. Like, it seems like this was an abduction by someone outside of the family, which, like, these days it would be so much harder to carry that out with Ring cameras, security systems, yeah, all that type of stuff. This is a case that you just don't really hear of the same type of thing happening anymore.
No, and I do think the main suspect theory is most likely probably what happened, which is what makes it more annoying, because it's just like there just isn't enough there, yeah, to put
like
it
they
on
actually
the person.
Have a name, they have, and the family still to this day, like, they name this person as a suspect on their website. So it's crazy that they have that much information, but still have not been able to find Christopher or solve the case.
Yeah, if you saw Baby Reindeer on, I think it was Netflix, mm-hmm, the suspect reminds me a little bit of Baby Reindeer Stalker. Yeah. So we'll get into that when we get there, though. So before we get there, we'll start off with some background on the family and on Christopher. So he was the youngest of 7 children. He was born to Gil and Bernice Abeita on November 28th, 1985. And the family runs a website to this day called findchristopher.com, and they've posted about their life on there. So this is from the website. It says, Christopher had 2 older brothers and 4 older sisters. His youngest sibling was 15 at the time, and he was taken. Oh, it was 15 at the time he was taken, and the oldest was 23. So kind of a big age gap between Christopher and the next sibling.
Yeah.
Christopher was a surprise baby because Bernice didn't think that she could get pregnant anymore because she was 42 years old when he was born. This is also from their website. Since Christopher was the baby of the family, he was spoiled by all of us. We played with him constantly. We took him for walks to the park, read to him, bought him toys and cute little outfits. We were all much older than Christopher, and we adored him. So the family lived in a house on Ashwood Circle in Cheyenne Hills, Colorado.
Yeah, so if you just look at the house, it looks like a normal residential suburban house. There's like a neighbor very, very close to it. It says 3-bed, 3-bath, 1,669 square feet on a 9,787 square foot lot, single family property. Yeah, so it's just basically like your very typical suburban home. It wasn't remote. It was very close to other houses. Like it's like a 2-story house. So nothing special, you know, that you would think would make it an easy target. Like I would think if anything, it would be a tougher target because there was so many houses close to it.
Yeah, they are close together. Bernice described Christopher as a smart, happy baby who enjoyed making his family laugh. She said he really was a doll. He was very entertaining. He would do funny things, and if we laughed, he would do it again because he knew he was going to get some attention. When Christopher was around 4 months old, Bernice found lipstick on one of Gil's shirts. She confronted him about it, and the two decided to do a trial separation. Gil owned another house in Pueblo, Colorado. One of their older sons was living there at the time, so Gil went to stay there during this separation. During the separation, at the same time every day, Bernice would receive a hang-up phone call. The Vanish podcast interviewed one of the adult children named Denise, who said that Bernice thought that the calls were annoying but didn't really think much about them.
I guess this is, you know, obviously you have to remember this is the 80s where you didn't really have caller ID. Like, I know you could probably do the thing where you dial back and see who it was and all that type of stuff. But it's not like today where the number just pops up on your phone. She might just think it was someone being a nuisance. Like, it is kind of strange, but I guess if nothing else is happening, you would just think it's someone being a pest or something like that is randomly happening. Yeah. You wouldn't think much else of it until afterwards when she looked back.
Yeah, it's like a hindsight thing. By July 1986, Gil and Bernice decided to reconcile, and on the night of July 14th, Gil spent his first night back at the home with the family since they separated. The family hung out together, and they recalled a memory where One of the beta teens pretended to sneeze after sniffing a bunch of flowers, and Christopher laughed and laughed. So they just kind of remember it as being like a fun night of being all back together again, having a good time, joking around and all that. Bernice had been breastfeeding Christopher and recently decided to start to wean him. Denise said that she was excited to give him a bottle. Christopher fell asleep in his sister's arms. Both she and Bernice walked upstairs to put Christopher to bed in his crib. The crib was located in Bernice and Gil's bedroom, literally probably 3 feet from their bed, they said.
Which makes it even more wild that this could have happened with, yeah, know, while they're sleeping in the middle of the night.
In a house with so many people, too.
Yeah, yeah.
The rest of the family went to bed around 12:30 a.m., and they had a habit of leaving the front door unlocked because, having teenagers, they were always coming and going, and one of the Abeta teen girls was staying at a friend's home that night, so Bernice thought that there was a chance that she'd want to come home at some point, so they left the door unlocked. At 6 a.m., Bernice woke up and discovered that Christopher was not in his crib, which I couldn't even imagine the horror of waking up and the baby's just not in there. She ran from room to room of the house looking for him. Bernice was alarmed to find that the front door of the home was wide open. She called the daughter that was staying at a friend's house to see if she had come home and maybe taken Christopher for a walk, but nobody had seen the baby. The police were called and arrived around 6:45 a.m. They carried out a search of the property and discovered that a basement window was also open and that the garage door opener was missing. In her rush to dress before police arrived, Bernice had pulled out an underwear drawer and had fallen onto the floor. Police initially questioned if this indicated that there had been a struggle, but it seems like that wasn't the case. None of Christopher's family nor any neighbors said they saw or heard anything unusual during the night, so the search for Christopher officially began. A lake that was 3 blocks from the family home was drained, but nothing was found. As in most child disappearances, the family were initially treated as suspects, and there were some suspicious circumstances that made them seem a little suspect at first. So just some to note. This was the first night that Gil had spent in the family home for months after being separated. So like, what are the chances this happens on that first night?
Yeah.
It was also questioned how the crib could have been feet away from both Gil and Bernice, and neither of them heard or saw anything when Christopher was being abducted. Gil admitted that he'd also been having an affair with a woman named Emma Bradshaw. Gil also admitted that he had not been excited about the idea of an unplanned pregnancy when Christopher was conceived. Police suggested that the parents wanted to have sex that night and that Christopher had interrupted them, so they wanted him gone. I'd be so annoyed for them to suggest that.
Yeah, like I would also be annoyed, but I do understand it's a plausible reason. I know. Like, first night back in the house after being apart for months, like, I think it's a reasonable, you know, thought to have
as part of hindsight.
Yeah, a motive type thing.
Yeah, but like hindsight, knowing what seems to probably be the actual thing, what happened, I'd be like, excuse me.
Yeah.
Gil did undertake a polygraph test and he passed. So understandably, Bernice was distraught about the disappearance of Christopher and had to be medicated. Bernice also agreed to take a polygraph test, and she failed the first one, which she believes is due to the medication that she was on, and the second was inconclusive. Bernice said that after she failed the first test, she was grilled by police for over 6 hours. She said they accused her of smothering Christopher and dumping his body in the lake near their home. Denise spoke about the search for Christopher that Bernice personally undertook. She would travel to different towns and cities to follow up on leads on her own, and at one point she even temporarily moved to New Mexico to follow up on a tip. Denise said, "When I look at everything she did, it was absolutely amazing. One time, a sighting came in from another state, and she got in the car and drove to the state. By the time the police started to investigate, she'd already checked it out and confirmed it was not Christopher. I'm a mom now, and I can't even imagine not knowing. She woke to an empty crib and her baby gone. Then suspicion swirled around her. Through it all, she continued to search for her son, even when it appeared local law enforcement had given up. She never once passed up an interview about my brother." So Gil quit his job to focus on the search for his son, and two of the older siblings took a semester off from school to help search. They also set up a toll-free hotline, and the family would man the phone 24 hours a day waiting for tips. Bernice would send packets of flyers to schools once Christopher was of that age, thinking maybe he was stolen by another family and was going to school. right? I'm assuming that's what she was thinking.
So I think like one of the theories they floated was that he'd been abducted by someone who wanted a child, which there's another thing that she did in the as part of the investigation, which we'll get into in a minute. But basically that someone had abducted him, because really most people would abduct a baby. I don't know. I'm generalizing. But you would think to actually seek out a baby from a crib would be because someone wanted that particular child for a reason. So maybe it would be to raise him, as they couldn't have their own children or had lost a child or something like that. So I think that that's what she was trying to achieve by sending the flyers to schools, that maybe he would have been enrolled and someone would recognize him as being Christopher.
Right. The family hired private investigators. They sold their house and cashed in their retirement funds to aid the search. They estimated that over the years, they spent over $1 million searching for Christopher. Bernice would also read obituaries and look for families that had lost a child around Christopher's age. She would then discreetly investigate those families to see if they had another child. So maybe like they stole him as a replacement child.
In their grief.
Like the thinking,
It's an interesting theory, and like one that makes sense. Like, you know, you would think that someone who was so deep in their grief would be the type of person to try to take a child for their own purposes. So it was an interesting tactic that Bernice used.
Christopher's family are adamant that the abductor must have been someone who knew the family and their habits. They believe the abductor knew that the front door would have been unlocked and knew where Christopher slept in the house.
So to this day, still on their website, still publicly, and like I've listened to other podcasts and interviews on this topic, the family believe that a woman named Emma Bradshaw, as we mentioned, she was the woman who had the affair with Gil, is a suspected abductor. Emma had a history of mental illness. She spent time in mental health facilities in the 1970s and 1980s. On the night of Christopher's abduction, Emma tried to call Gil multiple times up until midnight. She'd previously been charged with stalking and harassing another married man who had tried to end his affair with her. She went to that man's home, took his family photos off the wall, and she also sat outside his children's school. And I've read things that maybe indicate she threatened the children. So she has a history of this type of behavior, unhinged.
Very baby reindeer.
Yeah, when someone tries to break it off with her. The family have said they believe Emma was behind the repeated hang-up calls to the family home. Denise has said on the day following Christopher's abduction, the hang-up calls stopped for a period of time, but a few weeks later they resumed. The family tried to trace the calls, but obviously everyone knows that the caller has to stay on the line long enough for the call to be traced. In an attempt to trick the caller, they got the young son of a family friend to answer the phone, because usually it would be Bernice, because I guess most people would be at school and things like that. So the caller was surprised when a young male answered the phone, and they were
to make sure she was like, did I dial the right number?
Yeah, what have I done? Who is this? So they were able to trace the call, and they traced it back to Emma Bradshaw's workplace.
Of course.
This information about why the abaters believe Emma is the main suspect is from their Find Christopher website. This is all still on there. It's all public information. They say, a beta family suspect Emma Bradshaw, non-family abduction. Emma Bradshaw appeared to make contact with Christopher's father the night of the disappearance, calling numerous times up till midnight. The front door was open when the family discovered him missing. The family had been receiving hang-up calls for over 6 months before Christopher's disappearance. They stopped the day he disappeared, resumed again several months after. The CSPD traced the calls to Emma. Christopher's family was being stalked. Phone records indicate the victim's grandparents were also being stalked 1 month before his disappearance. Emma Bradshaw has prior police incident reports of breaking and entering. And another one that's interesting, they say Emma Bradshaw was a close personal friend of Larry Buckaloo, who was the former sheriff of Pueblo in Colorado. So maybe they are insinuating that she had some law enforcement ties, which is why she wasn't looked into as much as she should have been, or why she has, if she is the perpetrator, why she's been able to get away with it for so long. In 2013, Emma filed a lawsuit against the Abeta family. She said that Denise defamed her by sending emails to her boss and by making Facebook posts about her alleged involvement in the case. She said that this interfered with her employment. In November 2015, the jury sided with Emma for her claims about her loss of employment. They did say that the Facebook posts, though, were not defamatory, and Emma was awarded $150,000 in damages, which is wild to me.
I'd be so mad.
I know that there's essentially doesn't sound like there's any proof, really, that she was the one who took Christopher, like there's no DNA, there's nothing like that. Obviously, she was stalking Gil and was stalking the family, but that is a wild judgment.
Especially when the police also are like, yeah, she's a suspect.
Yeah. Well, so that, yeah, so the other thing is, like, people have, like, there are some reports that say she's never been named as a suspect, but as per public court documents, the Colorado Springs Police Department Detective Montez testified in 2015 that Emma was a person of interest. So Denise would later speak of the impact that Christopher's disappearance had on her mother. She said it changed her forever. It makes me sad to remember seeing her the days after Christopher went missing when she was curled up crying, saying, I need my baby. After the days turned into weeks and we still didn't have Christopher back, I saw her get up every single day and follow up on leads searching for answers. She was so desperate, and even with the seemingly limited results of her hard work, I never heard her say that she would quit searching. So in 2016, Bernice was diagnosed with terminal gallbladder cancer. Before she passed in February 2017, she made a final media push to find Christopher. She was then 73 at the time. She told ABC News, "Of course, I would like to have him back. I've always felt very positive that even though it's been 30 years, it would happen. I think that's what kept me going in trying to find him. There's no way we were going to forget him." She continued and said, "I'm trying to put vibes his way and say, okay, Christopher, maybe it's time for you to find us. Maybe it's more convenient for him to find us than for us to find him. I believe that all of us parents need justice. There's a lot of forgiveness going around, but ask a parent if they would forgive." Bernice said her last wish was for someone with information to come forward. She said, "What these people did to us was beyond cruel. At this point with my cancer, I usually be like, oh my goodness, cancer, I'm dying. But Christopher was the number one priority. I would reassure him that we love him no matter what, no matter who he is. We are still going to be looking. I was always positive that we were going to find him." Sorry, Denise said in May 2016 that her mother had been given between 4 to 8 months to live. Denise said, "She's dying. She knows it. We all know it. She's in the room as I'm talking and it's sad, but this is the reality. Maybe the answer isn't what we hoped for, that he's alive, but she'll leave knowing that we can be at peace and finally put him to rest." Before she died, Bernice left a message for Christopher in case he was ever found. She said, "You couldn't even imagine how much your whole family has loved you and missed you. It was the most devastating and horrific thing that would have ever happened to us." So Bernice did pass away on February 12th, 2017. This is an excerpt from her obituary. It says, "Bernice was a beautiful, adventurous, fun-loving mother, and hers was the home all the neighborhood kids wanted to visit. In July 1986, her seven-month-old son, Christopher, was kidnapped from her home. Over the past 31 years, Bernice never gave up hope for the return of Christopher, and through her tireless efforts made a huge impact on family whose children had disappeared or been murdered. Those family talk of Bernice's kindness, warmth, and encouragement to not give up hope in the search for the children and justice. While devoting much of her time to her search for Christopher, she selflessly raised her 6 other children, continuing to bring joy into their lives and the lives of her grandchildren. Her caring spirit and the love of others infused everyone around her. Her children have continued Bernice's commitment to others, advancing the search for missing children, leading fundraising activities, and actively supporting the families of our troops. Bernice's spirit of giving continued by donating her body to science so that others may live benefit in life through her death. On behalf of Bernice, the Abeda family would like to thank Mothers of Murdered Youth, National Center of Missing Children, Families of Homicide and Missing Persons, and Detective Montez of the CSPD for their continued efforts in the search for her missing son." So over the years, multiple men have now come forward and said they believe they may have been Christopher. I feel like this happens a lot in cases where babies and children go missing. People always come forward and say, "I think it might be me. My family had no photos of me, and every story they told me was different." So everyone who has ever come forward has been ruled out via DNA. This is a statement from 2018 from police. It says, "During this year, investigative tips were received identifying 3 separate people as potentially being Christopher. DNA was collected voluntarily from these 3 people," and it just goes on to basically talk about the investigation. They went with the CBI. They were sent to all these units. It says, "On February 1st, 2019, CSPD received the results for all 3 DNA samples that were sent to the lab in 2018. As a result of the testing, it was determined that none of these 3 individuals are Christopher." So Gil passed away in 2020 after he suffered a heart attack. The family released a statement to the media after that. They said, "The Abeda family is deeply saddened at the sudden loss of their father, Gil, and he will be missed. He was active in the community and was a staunch advocate for missing children after the abduction of his child, Christopher, in 1986. Despite their tragic loss, the Abetas will tirelessly continue the search for answers and justice for Christopher, whose case remains unsolved. The outpouring of community support is appreciated. So sometime after Christopher's disappearance, the Colorado Springs Police Department destroyed most of the case evidence, and the family have accused the police of negligence and incompetence in their investigation, which is crazy to me. Like, this is obviously a case that should remain active, or at least the evidence should be kept, but they have destroyed it. You hear that happening quite often in cold cases where people are like, I'm assuming it's when they do a clean out of an evidence room and they accidentally throw out stuff that's not meant to be thrown out. But
it must be, because especially now there's so much, I get back then there's only so much physical space, but now the internet and everything, there's so much digital space where you could scan in a lot of stuff. Mm-hmm. I know there's like still physical evidence, but a lot of it could just be put into secure databases, you would think.
Exactly. So the family do have a Facebook page, as I mentioned, called Find Christopher. They update that regularly to this day. I've just picked out two of their most recent posts. One from the 27th of June. It says, what kind of person looks at an innocent child and chooses to threaten them? They link a YouTube, and then it says, call 1-800-THE-LOST with your tips. There was another post from a few days before that. It says, maybe fear of retaliation kept you silent. If so, you're not alone and no one can fault you for that. Maybe once you tried to speak with authorities and were left feeling unsettled or dismissed. Whatever your experience, know this. Now is the time to come forward. You can share what you know without fear, without judgment. Christopher was taken from his loving family under the cover of darkness with no way to protect himself. He was just a baby. If you have children, grandchildren, nieces or nephews, imagine just for a moment what it would feel like if they vanished without a trace. Imagine not knowing whether they were safe or even alive. Please find the compassion within you to speak up. There are individuals who have already shown immense courage by coming forward with what they know, and we are deeply grateful. Their bravery has brought us closer to the truth, and if you've ever thought, I don't want to get involved, we urge you, now is the time to get involved. Do the right thing. You won't regret it. So obviously now Christopher would be 40 years old. At the time of his disappearance, he was described as a Caucasian male with blonde hair, blue eyes. He was of Swedish, German, and Spanish descent. His hair may darken to brown or brownish blonde as he grows older. His father and brothers are all of average to above average height, so Christopher may also be. Anyone with information about this case is asked to contact the Colorado Springs Police Department.
I was also just thinking, Emma is dead at this point, right?
No, Emma's alive.
Oh, really?
Emma Brad. Like, I Googled her after all this. Like, the family have listed her. I don't want to, like, get in any trouble. But if you go to the family website, they list her, not her address, but her suburb. As far as I know, she's still alive.
She must be pretty old then. Now,
like,
right?
There are people with her. Yeah, well, I would assume if Gil... So Bernice was 73 when she died I think Emma was a little bit younger, so
Christopher, who was a baby, would be like 40 now, so
yeah, so I would assume she'd be 70 maybe or something like that. Yeah,
interesting. Yeah, just weird that it seems like even the police are like, no, she's like a suspect, but what's been done? Like, you know, it seems like they searched, but did they investigate?
I guess really for me,
it's harder in the 80s, I guess.
Yeah. And I guess too, the two main theories in this case are that the parents or someone in the family were involved, or that someone else was involved. The family do believe this other person was Emma. I don't know. I could be wrong, but I really don't feel the family were involved. With what Bernice did over the years, like, she fought to clear her name after the polygraphs. I know that polygraphs aren't able to be used in court for a reason. I'd like, you know, obviously losing your child and being medicated could probably explain for having an inconclusive polygraph. I personally agree with the theory that it was someone who knew the family, but like wasn't from within the family, took Christopher.
Yeah, I mean, my opinion only, so that I don't get in trouble. Not that I think I'm going to get in trouble for saying that, but I just think it's way too suspicious for, like, especially with the phone calls. Like, she's calling Bernice. Emma's calling Bernice every day at the same time, hanging up. Then that night, she's calling Gil until midnight when they said they all went to bed at like 12:30-ish. She's calling. And then after the disappearance, the calls just suddenly stopped for a while. Like, what are the chances of these two things happening at once? Like having basically a stalker and this little baby going missing. I wouldn't be surprised if she was sitting outside the house calling him.
Yeah, even... I can't remember what I was going to say. Even like for the things, for the calls to have gone on for months and then for them to have stopped the day after Christopher was taken and then for them to resume months later is very suspicious.
Yeah. It's just, again, what are the chances of all this happening at once and them not being connected?
Yeah, absolutely.
And it seems like she was very jealous. She was probably very mad that Gil got back together with his family and he wanted to harm them. She wanted to harm them some way. And this could have been her way of doing that.
That Gil essentially picked Bernice over Emma, and obviously she couldn't really handle it. So,
and she wanted to hurt Bernice and hurt him. So, just crazy to think if that really is what happened. Just crazy to think that she went into their house, into their bedroom while they're sleeping, and took the baby.
Yeah.
Or whoever did it.
Like, what did she do with the baby? Like, I
know.
I don't think he's alive. I feel like if he was alive, he probably would have been found now with all DNA techniques. Like, you know, maybe he would have uploaded his data. I don't know. Maybe she's just passed him off to someone and it's dumb luck that he hasn't done that yet. I just feel like it would be so hard, even in the 80s, I know it was probably a little bit easier, but to take a baby and set that baby up with no paperwork, it would be a hard thing to do. Obviously harder today, but like I know in the past people always spoke about how they'd go to the graveyard and look for the details of a baby that had just passed and get their birth certificate and kind of start again that way. So I guess there is a possibility she did that, but I feel like if it was Emma, her reason for taking the baby was to get back at Gil and Bernice. So she probably, the baby, I suspect.
Yeah, I don't think she gave any care about protecting the baby.
I don't think her motive was to take the baby and raise the baby because, you know, I feel like it was just to hurt the parents.
Yeah, I agree. I think she probably immediately went and unfortunately probably like tossed the baby in a river or something equivalent, which is horrible.
Yeah, very, very sad. So just to finish off, on the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children, Christopher's family have written a letter to him. I'll just read it out. It is from 2019, but it's interesting and I think it kind of highlights how this has just basically taken up their whole entire life, which it would, obviously. Mm-hmm. But it says, "Dear Christopher, on July 15th, 1986, our family's life was changed forever. The previous evening was a quiet summer night and you took your first steps around the coffee table. There were flowers on the table and you laughed when I smelled them and I sneezed. I pretended to sneeze again and you thought that was the funniest thing and laughed a deep laugh I will never forget. I was the one who fed you your bottle that night. You fell asleep in my arms. Mum was right behind me as I walked upstairs and laid you down in your crib. It was Mum who covered you with a blanket and we said your goodnights to you. The next morning, I was awoken by Mum's scream. Christopher's not here. Where's Christopher? You are not in your crib. You were gone. You are the baby of a close-knit family with six older brothers and sisters who adored you. Your birth brought us so much joy. The reason your kidnapper had to steal you in the middle of the night under the cover of darkness is because there was never an opportunity to take you as you are always surrounded by your family. We don't know the young man you have become, but we have an obligation to you. The day you went missing, our parents devoted their lives to finding you. Even through the hardest of times when others seemed to have forgotten about you, they never wavered in their sense of purpose, and that was to find you. Despite the feeling of an overwhelming sense of helplessness and the days turning into weeks and the months into years and the years into decades, Mum and Dad travelled the country and investigated every single tip that came in, spending whatever money they had continuing their selfless search for you. In 2016, Mum was diagnosed with terminal cancer and leaving her with only months to live. Even though her health was rapidly deteriorating and she was so weak that getting up to go to the kitchen left her drained and exhausted, she continued to advocate for your return. Right before she succumbed to cancer, we arranged a meeting with the DA to discuss your case and request additional resources from law enforcement. That day when we arrived at the DA's office, I wanted Mum to use the wheelchair so she could save what little precious energy she had, but she insisted on walking into his office with the same strength and determination that had sustained her in your search over the last three decades. We don't know what your fate was that summer night in 1986, but we know we have never given up seeking answers. Your kidnapper's actions changed the course of our lives. Mum made it very clear that if you were found after all these years, she wouldn't want to disrupt your life, but she wanted you to know that you were loved and we never gave up looking for you. Not having answers and not knowing if you are safe or even alive does not come with any closure. We continue to plead to your kidnapper and those that have information to do the right thing and come forward. And if you are harmed, we seek justice. We promise you we will continue. So it would just be horrible to just have no idea. Even I know they always say it's called ambiguous loss when it's a missing person. You just can't begin to grieve properly for the loss, because what if they are alive? Mm-hmm. There's always that tiny little glimmer of hope that maybe they're alive and maybe you will be able to be reunited one day. It would just be like their whole entire lives were dedicated to trying to find their son.
Yeah, I couldn't even imagine. Like, it seems like it's been very all-consuming for them, as it should be. And just on the smaller scale, I guess you could say, obviously it's just like part of the bigger picture, but just knowing like how invasive it must feel, knowing that someone broke into your home, was in your bedroom while you were asleep, and took your baby. Like, how do you ever feel safe and secure again, knowing that that happened and having no answers as to why, what, who it was? Like, could that person still be around just like watching you? I would never feel secure again.
And even for Emma then to take them to court is just wild.
Like, oh my God.
Like, I understand they probably did hurt her employment by saying things online, but then, you know, I guess for her it's just a way to maybe try to prove her innocence that, hey, look what I'm doing. I had nothing to do with the abduction.
Yeah, I mean, I get that they shouldn't have personally attacked her, but I can't blame them either. But it's just, did they end up having to pay her money? Like, ugh, horrible.
There is,
even if it wasn't her, just having to, on top of like your kid being missing, then you're being sued and you have to pay someone that much money.
Spending $1 million on the search for your child, selling your houses, all that type of stuff, and then having to pay her $150,000.
Yeah. And I'm surprised that like the parents stayed together, right? I mean,
yeah,
I guess
they did until the end. Yeah, like I wondered that too, because I know they often say that families who endure a tragedy like this often ends up in divorce, but they stayed together until they both passed, or until Benice passed away.
Especially since it was potentially a result of an affair he was having. I don't know if they mean affair by like when they were separated, he was seeing her, then they decided to not be separated anymore, so maybe that's why it wasn't as like horrible to Bernice. But
well, because she found the lipstick on the collar, remember? So I feel like it had happened before they decided to separate. And I'm pretty sure that was like, I haven't heard that there was the two separate women. I'm pretty sure it was maybe Emma the whole time. Maybe, I don't know, there could have been another woman, I'm not sure.
Yeah, that has to
I've
be
never
tough
seen another
to...
woman mentioned anyway.
But I also figure Bernice was so like consumed by trying to find Christopher that maybe she just was like not even thinking of that.
Yeah. So just to end, there is a YouTube channel. I haven't updated it for a while, but it's called Find Christopher. But they do have like videos of the bedroom, and that video is titled The Steps of Christopher Abeda's Kidnapper. And there's a few, obviously this all happened a long time ago now, so a lot of the clips aren't available, but they do have clips of Bernice and things like that on there if you want to check it out. I'll link all that on the blog.
Definitely a crazy story. Like, the name is familiar to me, but I didn't really know so much about the case before.
Yeah, I feel like his photo is quite recognizable. There's a photo of him with like a baseball trophy, and he's wearing like a major league or minor league onesie or something like that. So I feel like that is a photo I've seen a lot over the years.
Yeah. The age progression is crazy too. I'm like, how do you know this baby looks like, is going to look like
this? I guess they look at the brothers and the father maybe.
That's true.
I don't know.
Pretty cool though. But yeah, that's it for this story so far. Hopefully there'll be more to come. One day we will keep an eye out for any updates. Hopefully we get some and it doesn't just live as a cold case forever.
Yeah.
So everything will be on the blog at truecrimesocietyblog.com. Also follow us on Instagram at True Crime Society. If there's any updates on anything, we'll post them there. We're also just posting like new, current, ongoing news, true crime stories on there. Make sure you follow our backup Instagram too, which is True Crime Society Backup, with everything that's been happening with these like mass bans and accounts being deleted, which Olivia is still dealing with. If you want to follow me, my account is StephSum_. Olivia's account is still locked in purgatory, or we're still waiting to hear what happens with her account. But she has TCS Olivia, if you want to check.
Yeah, if it just pops back up. But like, I've been looking, there's all these comments every day. This is one I just found wild. It says, which is the last thing I'll say about it today, my Facebook and Meta Oculus account was permanently disabled because I couldn't access the email attached in time to submit my ID. I lost 15 years of memory. I can no longer access the thousands of dollars I spent on Oculus because I was reported to be under 13. How is that a billionaire company doesn't have a human support team? How can I use my American Express to buy hundreds of dollars worth of stuff, but that wasn't enough to prove my age?
Wow. Yeah, that's crazy. I didn't even think about it with the Oculus and all that because I have an Oculus.
I've seen heaps of people. So like
you wouldn't even be able
like
to use it. And they're expensive.
It was on the Channel 9 news here this morning. I feel like it is happening mainly outside the US for some reason. Yeah. I don't know. Anyway.
Whatever. I don't know. Hopefully by the time this episode comes out, it'll all be sorted. And you'll have your accounts back, hopefully.
That would be nice.
But besides that, check us out on Patreon as well. We do weekly bonus episodes as well as all the episodes ad-free. So you get 2 episodes a week without any ads. We also have some fun chats on there. We have like a little book club chat going on if you want to read and talk about books or get recommendations. And we do release the main regular episodes a day earlier on Patreon as well. So check us out there. And all the usual stuff. If you can leave some nice Spotify comments, make sure you're still following us on whatever platforms, and share with your friends, tag us in your Instagram stories of what you guys are doing while you're listening to the podcast. We love seeing what you all are up to, love seeing your pets and your hobbies. It's really fun for us to reshare them, so do that as well. And that's it. That's all the usual stuff. So thank you guys for listening. Stay safe. Peace out.